I will hear from wrong, and I'll die in the
air. Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening and welcome to our Medical Tuesday Night broadcast with your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis. Before we get on with the show, I need to read our disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on Defender 7 radio show and Facebook page are those of the callers and or authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the Defenders 7. Now, for those of you new just tuning in here, we can be reached on our national Facebook page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Now, before you click that join button, just know we expect all of our members to and future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defenders 7. We also have a website. Type all lowercase letters, www.defenders, Roman numeral V as in Victor, with two small I's, .com. And on our site, you will find that we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. So please, by all means, purchase something or click that donate button. Every bit helps. Help us to help you and your communities in a time of need. We have a YouTube channel. Hop over there and check us out and hit that subscribe button. We're also on MeWe. Click on organizations, scroll down. Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Now for tonight's show and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we like your opinions, your thoughts. Contribute. Come participate. And that number to call, area code 914-205-5773. Again, number to call to participate, area code 914-205-5773. And if you don't feel like talking on the radio, you can always log into our chat room right here on Blog Talk. It's also live as the shows are ongoing. Now allow me to bring in your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis. And we also have Major Lorna Munson and Maria Delamain from Pennsylvania.
Hi,
good evening, ladies.
Good
evening.
How's you?
How's everybody doing? I'm doing.
Yeah. I'm here.
So, got a funny story.
Lorna's face.
Yeah. Your face.
Lorna's face.
No.
You said funny story.
No. Okay. It's been probably in the 70s, and it's been storming, and then it's overcast, it's thunderclap, and it's back and forth, right, for the last couple of days. So I got two of my windows open in the front, and I opened the front door, and I got a glass door. Well, my dogs, being retarded as they are, she jumped through the screen. And so we had to take the screen off and lower the glass. So if you know how when you raise it up, the open areas at the top. So anyway, I got the door open, and I hear, hello. And I'm like, hello? Hello? And back and forth. I'm like, who the fuck is that? So the next thing I know, I got someone. It was a cop. And before I could get up, both of my dogs were at the door. And
what did you do this time?
I didn't do anything. He was using his flashlight to keep the door closed because Pat's dog can open the glass door. And then my dog can jump over the whole entire door through the window. So I got up, and I'm holding it, and Pat had to get up and get the dogs. And so I went outside, and the cop's like, well, we're just going around, and they're going door to door taking a survey.
Would you like to have a shot?
On the neighborhood. Huh?
Would you like your COVID shot?
No, actually, he was a really nice cop, and he's like, well, we have a few questions to ask about your neighborhood. And I said, are they supposed to be honest answers? Do you really want to know? And he's like, oh, God. He's like, oh, God. Yeah, we need the truth. And so I let him know, and I said, for the most part, I feel somewhat safe in the neighborhood. I said, it's not from, the only thing I worry about is someone breaking in, but not really, not so much because of the dogs. The dogs scare the crap out of anybody that walks by.
Right.
My biggest concern is stray bullets. And I let him know. I was like, dude, do you know anything about the fireworks that go on here at all hours of the day? He's like, no. Not really. I said, well, look, I'm going to let you in a little secret. That means they're covering up gunshots from the many gangs that's in this neighborhood. Well, within a 10-block radius. He's like, well, what do you think we could do? I said, hey, why don't you do your job and start patrolling from, like, 5 o'clock to the middle of the night? I said, the only time we see you guys is if you're chasing someone hauling ass down the road. So that's the only time we see you. And I said, don't get me wrong. I said, you guys are around the corner over there at the gas station, but that's because of all the homeless people. I don't know. They don't really bother anybody, but I don't know if they contribute to a lot of the problems. So I said, try just kind of like patrolling. I don't care if it's the bike cops or if they got cops that walk the beat anymore. I don't know if they do that. I know they do in really big cities, but they don't really, this is not really a massive city. So, but I said, try driving by. I said, because you guys never show up until it's too late. So he's like, okay. I'm like, oh, thanks. Now hopefully they'll actually do their job. I mean, don't get me wrong. We have actually good cops here in Wichita. They do what they're supposed to, but I just think they like to avoid our neighborhood because it does suck. So, and then it started pouring the second we got done. I said, well, I hate it for you guys, but now you're going to get wet. And I mean literally the second we got done, the bottom fell out of the sky and it just started to storm. So, but... I just want to keep on trucking with the survival medicine book. And this week we're almost done. We're about 3/4 of the way through the book. So everyone knows about minor wounds. cuts, scratches, abrasions, and contusions or bruises, whatever you want to call them. So, and here's the thing that you've got to remember. Taking care of cuts and scratches and stuff like that on yourself is one thing, but doing it on somebody else is another. My daughter, for instance, my oldest daughter, she hates the sight of blood, but she will do the cuts and scratch, you know what I'm saying, on herself or her daughter. But on anybody else, no. She passes out when she sees blood, which is why she can never be a nurse. So if you're very squeamish with certain things, don't play the medic in your group. It's good to learn, like, basic first aid and stuff. But if you have a really squeamish stomach, you really shouldn't be the one to do anything significant, if you know what I mean, if something happens. Because you don't want to be the only one, and then something major happens, and then you pass out when you see blood or whatever. So that would be a no-go. So a soft tissue injury is considered minor when it fails to penetrate the deepest layer of the skin, which is the dermis. And this could include, like I said, cuts, scrapes, and bruises. Cuts and scratches, everybody knows what they are, you know, paper cuts. You fall on the asphalt, you know, things like that. Road rash, all those cool things. An abrasion is where a portion of the outer, the epidermis, has been scraped off. And, of course, everyone knows what bruises and contusions are. And that's a result from blunt trauma and don't penetrate the skin at all. Now, the black and blue and red is when it very first happens. Okay? And then the older a bruise gets before it starts to heal, it will change. It gets lighter and lighter. Now, I've had this happen to myself when I fell. The bruise was small. But by the time it was healing, the blood spreads, and therefore it makes it look really, really bad, but it's not. It's just the blood dispersing and spreading out, and that's why it gets to the yellowish, yellowish-orange looking, and that's normal before it completely heals. I don't know about you guys, but my children were clumsy as crap. I can't say they got it from just me, but no, they got it from their father too. I'm clumsy as shit. But there's other conditions which cause people to be really off balance and stuff. And that's a whole other nightmare. So, all these different minor issues can be treated. Wash the wound thoroughly. They used to say use antibacterial soap, but it's not important. Just use warm soap and water. If you can, try not to get the ones with the perfume, like Dove, and all of those types. You can use Dial or Irish Spring or any of those. But the more perfumed it is, it can actually irritate the skin and might make it burn. You can use an antiseptic. Like Betadine. You can actually use honey. Now, they actually make a medicated honey, and they made it into a paste or a gel or a cream. They've got different versions of it for different wounds. Or you can use regular table honey because it does have an antiseptic value to it. They even make dressings with honey embedded inside of the bandage. You could also use Neosporin ointment, Bactroban, Mucoprosin. I don't know if they still make this stuff anymore. Do you guys remember Mucurochrome?
Yeah, and the little Mucurochrome. Hell yeah, I remember that.
That's like fucking lava on your skin. I swear, every time we got a cut or a scrape or whatever, my mom would bring that stuff out, and I'm like, nope, nope. And we used to, they used to have to hold us down, and that's what they cleaned it with. I don't know if they make that anymore or not. Have you guys seen it at all?
No.
No.
Okay. I would get it just for the snowflakes. So you can, and in most of these little minor wounds, you could give Tylenol, Advil, Motrin, whatever, depending on the person's, you know, like I'm not allowed to take NSAIDs anymore, or like the Motrin and Advil because of my stomach. So I can only take Tylenol, which doesn't do crap, but make sure you know the person before you give them anything. The same thing with betadine. It's iodine. And I'm allergic to iodine. So they have these betadine swabs, and that's what they use. They still use them in the hospital, but make sure you know if the person is allergic to iodine or latex or adhesive allergies, because that does help when you do any type of first aid or anything like that. So minor bleeding can be stopped with a wet yeah, sure. I've never heard of this. I have never heard of that. It says it's an item normally used for shaving cuts. Huh. Actually, all you got to do is take a gauze, a 4x4, 2x2, depending how big it is. For minor cuts and scrapes, it's just one little 4x4, and you put a little pressure on it, not a whole lot, and that's it. Bleeding stops. I've used washcloths, you know, and just hold it there. Bleeding stops. Put a Band-Aid on it. If not, the best thing to do is leave it open to air so it heals faster, unless you're having to go to work. You're going to be working in a garden or outside or anything like that. Cover it up. Good luck keeping them on kids, because kids hate Band-Aids unless it's Batman or Barbie or whatever.
My granddaughters, they'll run you right out of Band-Aids.
Yeah, okay, here's the thing. Do they use them when they need them, or do they use them to play doctor?
Oh, they use them.
They put them on the doll.
They need them.
Okay,
they use them. The little injury, they need a Band-Aid.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. But see, and they don't keep them on long, and then they want another one, and they want another one. And, yes, they do put them on dolls. They do put them on dolls, and they're teddy bears and whatnot, and that's always fun. So that's why you get a box of cheap Band-Aids. Huh?
My grandma used to put red milk and sugar on our wounds. I know. I did use for my brown recluse.
I've never heard of the sugar, but I've heard of the milk and bread.
Yeah.
Sugar, I think it's the same idea behind the honey or whatever. Because I've heard the same thing. I forget the reasoning behind it, but I've heard the same thing about putting the bread and sugar on an open wound thing. Like a bandage.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it has to do with coagulation or something, maybe. I don't remember.
I know that it works the same thing on boils, the bread and milk. It pulls the crap to the surface. I do know that, but it doesn't work on me. I don't care what you say. I've done it. I've done everything. Boilies doesn't work, and I've used that little – it's a little tin. It's an orange tin. It's about the $0.50 size, and it's about a half inch thick, and it's a salve. And you just rub your finger on it a good amount and rub on top where the boil is at, and boom, brings it to a head. Okay, so also they have liquid bandage. It's called New Skin. But normally, I mean – you can use Steri-Strips for pretty much any type of deeper cut, which I'm probably, I think we're going to be going over that. You can also do an ice pack, depending on what it is, because of inflammation, and it helps. It also helps soothe it, and it kind of numbs it. And it helps with the pain. So like I said, bruises will change color over time from the blackish blue to brown to yellow as they heal. And they look atrocious, I'm telling you, especially when they're on the face. Your face and your abdomen, you look, especially if you are in the hospital and they have to do daily injections for like Lovenox or heparin or whatever, you're not supposed to bruise if they do it right, but you'd look like a human pincushion, and you will have the black and blue bruises, and then they spread, and your whole abdomen can be covered. But it's nothing, you know. And also, there's different types of bruises. Not all bruises hurt. Some bruises actually hurt, and that just means you've injured it below the, you know, the upper layers of skin, and it's deeper down. Like you've bruised the muscle and possibly the tendon and or whatever, where depending on where it's at. And some bruises, they don't hurt at all. So here's the following alternative process to deal with some of these. Evaluate the seriousness of the wound. If it's minor, you can continue with home remedies. Stop minor bleeding with herbal blood clotting agents like yarrow root, cinnamon, cayenne pepper powder. Compress the area with gauze. I would, depending on your pain tolerance, that cayenne pepper compress, if it's a scratch, or, you know what I'm saying, if it's kind of like into the skin, I wouldn't use that. That'd probably burn like hell. That's probably the Maturochrome's natural remedy. After minor bleeding is stopped, clean the wound with herbal antiseptic. Mix a few drops of oil with sterile water and wash out the wound thoroughly. So these are the same essential oils that I've noticed that's used periodically. Lavender oil, tea tree oil, rosemary, eucalyptus, and peppermint. Now, you can go to the best place to find essential oils, apothecaries, the apothecary stores. Some of those, I call them hippy dippy stores, the ones that sell all the, you know, the crystals and the moon rocks and all that crazy shit. They will probably have it. Not to mention, you might find them at, some of the stores that sell CBD oil, and you know, I'm talking about all those new age stores and
you
some tobacco
stores
that are,
homeopathic stores. Homeopathic stores,
well,
too.
It depends on what they want to call it. I know a lot of the tobacco stores that are the big ones that sell your paraphernalia, your smoking paraphernalia, they will have CBD oil. They will have essential oils and all that other cool stuff, too.
Yeah, I got a question
like I said,
for you from the chat room.
Sure.
Anything for leg cramps?
For leg cramps, potassium. That's strawberry, white potatoes, and bananas are the three biggest ways to get potassium. Naturally, I should say. A lot of times, depending on why, if they're a heart patient or have high blood pressure, if they're an athlete, it just means the potassium is depleted out of your muscles. And that's why you get the Charlie horses in the back of your legs. Well, it depends on where they're at. That's usually where they're at. But
the doctor told my ex-husband he needs to cut back on his beer drinking.
Yeah, and see, that's the other thing. Your alcohol and a lot of caffeine will deplete because it dehydrates. And that's one of the first. When you go to the hospital, on your blood work, they're going to check your potassium, your sodium, and your other cardiac enzymes and whatnot. And that's the first thing. For me, my potassium is always low for some reason.
For the trolley horse thing, I actually have something. It's all natural. It's actually the Amish. It's an Amish thing. It's apple cider, garlic, and ginger. It's a liquid.
And ginger?
And it works almost immediately. And I have some down in the car. It also works for restless leg syndrome.
Do you drink it, or you rub it down?
I guess you could rub it on, but I drink it.
If you want to get past the bad taste of the apple cider vinegar, that's why I said banana. Bananas work very fast.
Oh, I just drink it straight, or I mix it with water. I like apple cider vinegar.
Well, it also depends on which kind you get, because there's the natural,
non-processed. It's an Amish thing, so it's natural. So again,
I mean the apple cider vinegar. There's different types. There's pasteurized and non-pasteurized. Let me tell you something. Okay. That non-pasteurized shit, it's strong. It's nasty, but it works. But it's nasty. So like I said, if you don't like apple cider vinegar, and the ginger, and what was the other thing?
It's garlic. It's a liquid.
Garlic.
It's apple cider vinegar, garlic, and ginger. They're all anti-inflammatory.
Pineapple's good for anti-inflammation. Pineapple juice. You could get non-sweetened pineapple juice. You could eat a pineapple, whatever. It's good for sports injuries. And it's an anti-inflammation food.
Mm-hmm.
So with everything that we go over, you can either get it in an herb like the peppermint, eucalyptus, and all that stuff, or you can actually get it straight from food.
Right. So
the thing is make sure you don't get processed.
Well, I know that I have peppermint oil. I have peppermint oil, but it's for aromatherapy. So it's not,
You can get it at Walmart. Get the aromatherapy essential oils at Walmart.
If you mix it with an oil, then you can put it on your skin. You can't take it internally, but the aromatherapy that I have, it says that like the citronella, in order to scare away mosquitoes.
Oh, okay.
If you want to put it on, I can either put it in the thing you put the drops on, you plug it in, and it sends stuff smells out. Or you can get an oil and mix it with this oil and put it on your skin. You know, so you can use it externally if you mix it with this oil. Now, I probably just regular oil would work.
They have glycerin. Glycerin oil. You go to Hobby Lobby in the candle section, and they have a lot of the essential oils there too.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, not just aromatherapy oils. When you make candles and you make soaps, all of those essential oils I didn't even think about it until just now, but Hobby Lobby sells them. And they got a pretty big section of it, too. Or you can get them online.
And you're saying they're all the – I mean, not for internal use, but for external use.
No. This is all external. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, or you can also use, there's other antiseptics like garlic, raw unprocessed honey, echinacea, and witch hazel and St. John's wort. Witch hazel is amazing. And someone tried to argue with me that witch hazel is dangerous for your skin. I said, stop being stupid. No, it's not. I use it on my face all the time.
I think it's better than alcohol. Absolutely. I like it better than alcohol.
Well, yeah. Okay, here's the thing. I have my face is super, super oily. And I will use the green witch hazel, the wintergreen.
Yes.
And it cleans it. It dries. I mean, it's the only place on my whole entire body. Everything else is super dry. I'm like,
when I was young,
hell?
I have to do that. I did that too when I was young. I agree with you.
But it's not bad for your skin. I mean, come on, look at all the other skincare products that these kids use. The even what we used back in the day, all those astringents is harsher than witch hazel. So
yes, I agree.
Yeah, you can use witch hazel on your skin, and it also does good. It pulls, makes your skin tighter for a little while, at least. A little while. So hemorrhagic.
I use it for blackheads.
True, yeah. You can do that. So hemorrhagic and major wounds. In a major disaster, traumatic wounds may be common. For the medic, for a family or group, should be prepared for the worst possible injuries. And like we've said, it does not have to be an apocalyptic event, God forbid. It could be a natural disaster. It can be camping, hiking, hunting, a car accident. Mm. So everything that we teach can be used at any point in time. It's also important to practice. Now, if you're already a medic or a nurse, doctor, whatever, you're going to be doing this all the time anyway. But for those who are, if you have a group of people or whatever, it's good to practice, you know, your basic stuff.
I'm clumsy, and I have a sister who, you know, she's a little bit clumsy. And a niece and three nephews. I get a lot of practice on simple stuff.
Oh, and that's the thing. And I'm sure kids will let you practice on doing dressings and all kinds of stuff. So they love playing doctor and all that stuff. So, yeah. So cuts on the skin can be minor or catastrophic, superficial or deep, clean or infected. Most significant cuts, also called lacerations, penetrate both the dermis and the epidermis and are associated with bleeding, sometimes major. Sometimes the cut can go all the way to the bone where everything's exposed, and also depending on where. Now, if you get a major laceration on your abdomen, if it's deep enough, it's called an evisceration, and that's when your innards become your outards. Everything falls out. But don't despair. All you have to do is, if you have like sterile water or saline, well, just lay them back in the wounds and pour the saline on it and cover it with a plastic, like how you can even use saran wrap, God forbid if you have to use it, to keep it moist. You don't want to pack it dry. It has to stay moist.
Right.
So it doesn't, And you don't have to, and honest to God, I've seen this done. I've seen someone who was eviscerated, and all they do is they shake the person gently, and all the shit falls back into place naturally.
Huh.
Yeah, unless they've got to pull everything out, and then, yes, you've got to kind of just lay it back in there. But, yeah, it's pretty cool how they do it. Bleeding can be venous in the wound by your veins, arteries, capillaries. Of course, when you get your arterial bleeds, it's important to stop the bleeding as fast as you can, because you can hemorrhage and bleed out, depending on your carotid, your femoral, and your jugular. You will bleed out within less than a minute, or you can, especially if you completely sever it. Then yes, you will. So bleeding can also be arterial, like I said, which is bright red because of the higher oxygen content, and comes out in spurts that correspond to the pulse of the patient. So every heartbeat the blood will spurt. If you guys notice that on all these, if you, any military movie, any, I don't care what movie you watch, any TV show, every time you see it, the heartbeat and it pulses, that means that the heart's pumping out. And that's why it does that. So as the vein and artery usually run together, a serious cut can have both. So you can cut a vein and an artery. Once below the level of the skin, large blood vessels, tendons, and nerves may be involved. So you have to check for circulation, the sensation. Can the person, just say you got a cut on the thigh, right? You're going to check the pulse. You could check on the top of their foot. And don't push too hard. Use your pointer finger. You can use your two finger, not your thumb, because if your thumb, you'll pick up your own pulse. So your middle finger and your pointer finger, and if you gently lay them on the top of the foot, you can feel your heart rate, and that's called the pedal pulse. And so you could check to see if circulation is getting all the way down the leg. Also, the ability to move an injured area. Vessel and nerve damage are more likely to occur in deep cut lacerations, punctures, crush injuries. If you sever a nerve, they're not going to feel anything. Below that injury, you will not feel it. So that's why whenever you're in a car, any type of accident, and you have spinal damage, that's why we put the cervical collar on, because sometimes they can bruise the nerves. And that's why they check and they do the thing on your foot to see if you can feel. And that checks to see where nerve damage is on the body. For an extremity injury, evaluate the capillary refill. And a capillary refill is you just take your finger and you press on the person's fingernail and see how fast it goes from white back to pink. And the slower it is, well, it should be fast, like 3 seconds or less is what it should be. Let's see. I just already said that. If it takes longer for the fingertip, or if the fingertips are blue, there may be damaged blood vessel injury somewhere. And that's why if your fingers are blue. If the sensation is decreased, test by lightly pricking with a safety. Yeah, take a safety pin or something and just prick, like tap. And that's how they check for sensitivity to make sure you don't have severe nerve damage. Because like I said, if you haven't noticed on all these TV shows and movies, that's what they always say, they'll know within 24 to 48 hours, because sometimes you can bruise them, the nerves. And that's why they can't feel their legs or their feet or whatever. And the farther down the spinal injury, the lower down the damage will be. But yeah, you can bruise it. And so sometimes they have to wait until the bruise is gone or the swelling. One major thing is optic nerve could be swollen if you get hit in the head. And that's why someone can't see for a while. And once the swelling goes down, oh, they can see again. So there's many different things. That's why they say with head injuries, spinal injuries, keep them as still as possible. And that's why you use the neck brace. And you can always make a makeshift neck brace. So evaluating blood loss is an important aspect to dealing with wounds. An average-sized human has about 10 pints of blood, which is why I said it depends on how long it'll take you to bleed out. So one and a half pints or less, the patient experiences little to no effect. You can donate a pint of whole blood every 8 weeks because your body will, your heart's just going to remake it. So losing a pint of blood, it's not going to – you might be a little lightheaded, maybe. That's why they want to make sure when you donate blood, if you just ate, if not, that's when they give you the orange juice, apple juice, and like cookies or something after you donate blood. So anything for a pint and a half to 3.5 pints, rapid heartbeat and respiration occurs. The skin becomes cool and maybe pale. Sometimes the person can be agitated. And if you're not accustomed to the sight of blood, you might be. Yes, why I said, make sure that anything about the human body is not going to make you woozy. So even like I said, even a small amount of blood on the floor or the ground can make your medic or your first aid person a little uneasy. Because don't forget, blood spreads. Okay, so anything from 3.5 to 4 pints of blood, blood pressure begins to drop and the patient may appear confused and the heartbeat is usually rapid. Anything more than 4 pints, the patient is very pale and may be unconscious. After a period of time with continued blood loss, blood pressure drops further, the heart and respiration decreases, and the patient is in serious danger. And that's when you're at risk of bleeding out. As the medic or the caregiver, you should always have your gloves. Now, like I said, it depends on you. If you have a latex allergy, you'll have the nitrile gloves or whatever, which are latex-free. So anytime you're dealing with blood or body fluids, make sure you have gloves on at least. This is when treating the patient will help keep the wound from becoming contaminated. Because if you got dirty, nasty hands, you don't want to be touching someone with a cut or a wound. Because you don't want your germs and whatever is on you to get into them. So try to avoid touching the palm or finger portions of the gloves as you put them on. If there's no gloves, grab a bandana or another cloth barrier to press on the wound. If you have a towel, washcloth, a clean, I mean, hopefully it's clean. You can use a shirt, T-shirt, anything that'll help absorb fluid, blood, you can use it. The cornerstone of hemorrhage control is direct pressure. And this measure will often stop bleeding all by itself. Bleeding in an extremity may be slowed by elevating the limb above the level of the heart. So say if it's, it doesn't matter if it's your leg or your arm, lay flat and just raise the leg up. And then also, if the bleeding is bad enough, if you're extremely, I mean, if you're hemorrhaging, you may have to result in a tourniquet, but like I've said, don't use a tourniquet unless you've been properly trained on how to use it. You can use direct pressure, which is the first and the best way to do it. But always remember that if you have a major wound, a puncture, a laceration, I don't care what it is, never take off the first dressing. So if it soaks through, I'm sure you guys have had Band-Aids, cuts and stuff. Like when if you get an IV and they take the IV out, it bleeds. And sometimes it bleeds through the Band-Aid. Well, same principle applies for a major wound. If it starts to bleed through, never remove it. Just add more to the top of it and more pressure. Because what you're going to do is you're going to cause more damage to the wound itself. So whatever blood clotting there was to it, you just ripped it off and made it worse and traumatized that wound even more. So just remember, just add more to it. If there's a lot, you're going to use a lot. That's why it's important to have a lot of stock of your Curlex, your gauze, your abdominal pads. If you see a person's got a gunshot wound, you are not going to use a gauze. Use the abdominal pad because the abdominal pad is going to absorb more blood. So use the bigger bandage. If you have it, I should say. So pressure points are located where major arteries come close enough to the skin to be compressed manually. Pressing on the pressure point for the area of the injured area may slow the bleeding further down. So depending on where it's at, if you can, like in your groin, press on it up there to slow it down at the bottom part, wherever the wound is at, or you could just do direct pressure right on top of the wound. Using pressure points, we can map specific areas on which to concentrate our efforts to decrease bleeding. For example, if there's a large blood vessel, the popliteal artery, which is behind the knee, if you have a bleeding wound on the lower leg, apply pressure to the back of the knee. So you want to use the one that's closer to the injury. Okay. So you have pressure points. If you have a scalp wound, it's just you can't put a tourniquet anywhere. It's direct pressure, no matter where it's at. You have, I would try and stay away from your carotid, the one that's on your neck, because your breathing is right there. So you don't want to cut off someone's breathing because you could push too hard and push on their esophagus and there goes their breathing. If they have an arm wound, you could do one that's under the armpit. The one on your hand, you could use your wrist. There's your femoral artery, which is right there in your groin. The popliteal is the one behind your knee, and the one on top of your foot is your other, your pedal pulse is on top of your foot. So, but then again, you really need to see this book to understand what I'm talking about, because it shows you exactly where the pressure points are at. So if it fails to stop the bleeding, then it's appropriate to use a tourniquet. If you can't, if the pressure point's not working, the direct pressure's not working, then use a tourniquet. But like I said, please know how to use it before you use it. And never, ever, 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 never, ever put a tourniquet directly on top of a wound. It goes right above it. And God forbid, never use a tourniquet on a scrape or an abrasion. But we know who did that. Most are simple to use. It could even be placed with one hand. An improvised version can be made. You can use a bandana. Make sure it's at least 2 inches wide. If you have to use an improvised tourniquet, if you don't have an actual tourniquet. But try not to use ropes and wires, because they will cut into the skin, and that's why it has to be wider. And that's why they make tourniquets at least an inch wide. Tourniquets must be placed tightly. Arterial bleeding usually requires more pressure than simple venous bleeding to stop it. Like I'm telling you, if you use a tourniquet, it's going to hurt like a son of a bitch, because you have to twist it so tight to cut off the complete supply of blood. Now, if you use a tourniquet, you have to put, and this is what they taught us, put a T on the person's forehead or somewhere on the body. So when EMTs, or if you get to the hospital, they can say, oh, look, a tourniquet. And right the time that you put it on there. And where it's at. Unless they haven't figured it out when they see it. So that way they know. But chances are, remember this. If you use a tourniquet, they may end up losing that limb. So, because the longer you cut off the supply of blood, the more damage is going to be done. That's why it's always only like 2 inches above the wound, maybe 3 inches above the wound. So just remember that. In a survival setting, it's important to note the tourniquet, like I said, once it's placed, Now, this is saying to loosen it every 10 minutes so you can actually save the limb. But it'll also help you determine whether or not clotting is taking effect. If the person's anemic, if they're on blood thinners, it's going to take a long time to clot. So that's the other important thing to know. Tourniquets are painful if they're left on too long. Like I said, they could lose the limb. And the only place you can use a tourniquet is where? It's actually four places. Come on, guys.
Oh,
what are the four
Lord.
Places?
You mean like above the wound type of thing? Or you mean
no,
like
no,
on
no,
the
no.
upper side? What do you mean where
no,
you
no.
to use it?
Two arms, two legs. That's it.
you're not going to put somebody's neck on their chest. Yeah, okay, I get what
yeah,
you're
saying. You cannot use it on the head, the neck, or the torso. Now,
right.
if you have, but here's
I'm
the thing.
I misunderstood the question.
if you've got, now, but listen, if you've got a wound to the groin, right, you can't use a tourniquet, even though it's still on the leg, because you can't place it. I'm talking
bad.
Like if it's right, if someone gets, yeah, if it's right up there, you're not going to be able to do it. So you're going to have to put, and if you have to, we did this for practice, you may have to use your knee to add pressure to save someone's shot. Or if they got a penetrating wound and the object is not in them anymore, you may have to use your knee.
Hey, Kim.
Honey, yeah.
How about using mustard for burns?
Mustard for burns. I've never heard of that. But the thing is the vinegar would, yeah. Okay, for burns, you do not want to use butter, toothpaste, lard, or any of that stuff because it will make the burn worse. But let me check real quick. But I believe I wouldn't use mustard because of the vinegar.
Right.
Now,
well, it was a question asked in
mustard compresses or pastures, I know they're good for some things, but I don't know that I would put it on a burn.
Oh, no, I wouldn't because of the vinegar, but mustard's good for heartburn.
Right.
If you have heartburn, take a teaspoon of mustard.
I didn't know that.
It says you can use petroleum jelly, but I'm guessing it would dip. Oh, that's a first degree burn. Did they ask what kind of burn? Bobby?
Free beer.
No, they were just asking about using mustard for burns. Is that okay to use?
No.
No.
But you can also use aloe vera gel. Coconut oil is good. So you could take aloe vera gel with one teaspoon of turmeric and put it on the burn. The turmeric, like in the spice that you use to cook with, you can use that. with aloe vera gel and make it a paste. But I wouldn't see the thing. Oh, and they also have that honey stuff too. But I wouldn't use. Let's see, 9 home remedies. We're going to look at this. But yeah, anything with vinegar base, I wouldn't use it because it's just going to burn. It'll sting. It'll add more to it. So a burn and a scald. Let's see here. Well, you could run the burn under cool water for 20 minutes, but I wouldn't do that for like third degree burns. I would do it for like sunburns, and because those can be sunburns can actually be second degree burns. Run it under cool water, and then this is a mild antibacterial soap like Dial and whatnot. Don't scrub it. Just I would use liquid instead of a bar, or you could lather it on your hands and then gently rub the burn. Antibiotic cream. When you have open blisters, you may want to use antibiotic creams and ointments. That's medication. Stay out of the sun, the aloe vera. Okay, honey. Okay. They found that honey might provide some clinical benefit when a person applies it to when you put honey, regular raw honey that you eat, right onto the bandage, and then place the bandage on top of the burn. And because it's got antibacterial properties in it, and it can help sterilize the area and prevent infection. So, and it can also provide some easing of the pain. Let me see. I've never heard of that one. Okay. So here's the thing. You want to avoid essential oils. Now, see, this says not to use coconut oil, but the other article said you could. So just avoid oils at all. Oils trap heat, and they prevent the heat from escaping the burn. So that's why you don't want to do that. Let's see, butter, never use butter. Let's see, don't use ice because it could do more harm than good because it could just add further irritation to burned skin. And toothpaste, it's not sterile, and it may encourage bacteria to spread.
Why would you use toothpaste anyway?
Huh?
Why would somebody even think to use toothpaste?
Because somebody apparently did. But here's the thing. It's kept in your bathroom. And, I mean, there's not perfume, but there's other things like mint and carbonate, and that will burn. Now, let me find out.
I would not use toothpaste.
Hold on. I'm gonna look this up, and I'm gonna see because I want to give him. Let's see. Find out mustard on burns. Why you shouldn't use it? Because I want to give the person a reason why. You know, not just I think. So, just because someone says use mustard or ketchup for that matter on a burn. Doesn't mean you should. There's no scientific evidence supporting a mustard remedy for a minor burn. In fact, it can cause your skin to burn more. Let's see. It can cause a reaction on the body because its ingredients can irritate the skin, and that's the vinegar. So that's the real reason. It's the vinegar. So, but there you go. That's the reason. Okay. I'll just leave my thing open. If anybody else has any questions, just ask away. Let's see. Uh-oh. Hold on. I lost my place. Hold on. Okay. Your body may also build up toxins in the extremity, and these become concentrated and rush into your body core when you release the tourniquet. So that's why it's important to check and all that stuff. So it takes less than 1 hour or two with a tourniquet in place to cause that problem. So if you know for a fact that you're not getting, try not to use a tourniquet at all costs. As such, you should mark the victim, like I said, with the time the tourniquet was placed. Once you're comfortable that major bleeding has stopped, you can release the tourniquet, but leave it there. Like, release the pressure, but just leave it in place. Irrigate the wound aggressively with sterile water. You can use one part betadine to 10 parts water, but like I said, make sure they're not allergic to iodine. Or you can use sterilized water. But they also have antiseptic solutions, which is even better than using sterile water. You can use hydrogen peroxide initially to help clean, and it pulls the bacteria up. But I found out that it's not good to continuously use peroxide on the same exact wound. So there's new trials, new cells are trying to grow, and concentrated antiseptics dry out the fragile new cells that are slow healing. That's why whenever you have any type of major wound, when you change the dressing, it takes 8 hours for that wound to get back to the same room temperature or the same temperature that the dressing was at. And like I said, the point of like dry dressings, wet to dry, there's different types, and you know, it's a whole other nightmare. But when you pull a dressing off, it pulls some of the dead tissue off, and that's why it causes you to bleed some more. So that's why it's important to change dressings once a day, once every 8 hours, depending on what your doctor says, and all that cool stuff. Packing the wounds with bandages is not just for sopping up blood. It helps apply pressure, like I said. It's important to make sure you put the most pressure where the bleeding was occurring on the wound. Curlex is the stuff that's it's wrapped up in a roll. If you don't, just say you don't have any abdominal pads, right? And this is a good place to say this. If you don't have any abdominal pads and your wife or girlfriend or whoever has maxi pads or, you know, the always super double, triple with wings that wrap around your neck, the big ones, you can use those because it's the same principle, okay? For gunshot wounds, penetrating wounds, you can even use tampons. I know paramedics and EMTs hate that with a passion, and they'll tell you that, but as a medic, that's what we were using for gunshot wounds. Now, if you're impaled with something, you're going to leave that, but you are not taking that out because that could be a cork to stop the bleeding, and you can let a surgeon deal with that when you get them to a hospital. Hopefully it's where you could get to a hospital. But anyway, a Curlex. So if all you have is Curlex, which looks like an ace wrap, but it's a gauze, don't stuff the whole roll there like that. Unroll it and kind of like you would toilet paper when you pull the toilet paper out to use it. Same principle. Undo it and then gently pack it down. It absorbs better. That's why you would do that. So cover with a dry dressing for further protection. There's this thing, it's called an Israeli bandage. You can use those. it's hard to come by Israeli bandages if you're not in the military, but I'm not sure if you could get Israeli bandages at your Army surplus stores. You can get them at gun shows, but they're awesome to have. And the Israel and the Israelis are the ones who came up with it, henceforth the name. So it helps the medics to have hands free for further care or to attend. That's why it helps. It's got a thick pad on it, and it's like an ACE wrap, but you wrap it up, and it's got the little thing. You clip it and tie it, and it's pretty cool. Anywho, so knife and gunshot wounds. The process described above is for stopping a hemorrhage, and dressing a wound will also work for traumatic injuries, such as a knife and a gunshot wound. Like I said, if you have a penetrating wound, a knife, a tree, I don't care what it is. If it's protruding into your body, your eye, your skull, leave it alone. One, it's going to hurt worse coming out than it did when it went in. And you're going to you could do a whole lot more damage. So leave it alone. So this will give you time to get the person to the hospital, hopefully, if it's in a situation where you could get to one. So basically, the best thing to do is to support the object. You wrap gauze around the bottom that's closest to the body, and then just tape to the gauze and support the item, whatever it is that's penetrating the body, to support it so it doesn't come out or shift or anything like that. Another thing is, I don't know if you guys know the stuff called quick clot. That is to be used as an extreme last resort. And the only time you would ever use quick clot is if it's your whole abdomen is pretty much, if you got you got shot or something, and it's going to be hours before you can get to a hospital. Cause it takes the last I heard was 12 hours of surgery to remove quick clot because it cauterizes your wounds, and that stuff is not easy to come by. So let me look it up real quick for anybody who has a inquiring mind. Spell it right. Quick clot. Okay. So it's called a hemostatic bandage is what it is. It's also powder. They have some that's got quick clot that's inside of, wow, you can actually buy those. Huh. But that's not what I want. I didn't know you could actually buy quick clot. Okay.
Yes, that's what I got some last month. I got it on that Patriot website. I was telling you about. I got a packet. It has three separate packets. I mean, yeah, if I'm ever using it, it's pretty much zero, but I'd rather have,
Who the hell knows? If you can't use a tourniquet, that's when you would use it. And they're talking hemorrhaging. Hemorrhaging is when you would use it, but that's not answering my question because I want to know.
It's a last resort item. It's a tourniquet.
Oh, yeah.
It's a last resort item. And you
it
have
is
no other
very,
choice.
Yeah, it's the very last resort.
The same thing. I got individual thingies of super glue because you can also use super glue to seal a wound shut that's bleeding type of thing. So, that's another thing.
Oh, wow.
And I know that because it's doctor.
Okay, so this is saying it could be at the 24 hours. It could be left on the body, on the wound.
What could? The blood
quick clot
stuff?
Yeah.
Really?
It does have an expiration date. That's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for, blah, blah, blah. And there's stuff called quick clot or C-lock. And I think what they did was they made a different version of it. So basically what is this? Quick clot produces a lot of heat when it reacts to blood, and it can be very painful. But it does take hours of surgery to remove it, and that's what I'm looking for, because I can't remember how long it took. But the last time I checked, it was like 12 hours. But then again, this was 10 years ago, so... come on. Well, crap. I'm sorry, guys. I thought this would be an easy process. Okay, how long does it take?
Well, wait until you have the book memorized. Then it will be real quick.
Huh?
I said once you have the book memorized, it'll be real quick.
Yeah. Okay. So apparently there's a quick clot that, like I said, it could be left on for 24 hours. It says to remove it, gently remove dressing and thoroughly irrigate the wound. But there is one of those that says, and I cannot think for the life of me, I guess it's not quick clot unless they've redone it. But they said it took surgeons hours to remove it, and that's why they hate it. Well, shit.
Well, this stuff that I have, it's called Blood Ready Hour Blood Clot Powder. It's a blood coagulant plus antibiotic. It says,
yeah.
It says use, it doesn't say. It says that the ingredients are sterilized quinoparlite, hemostatic powder, curcumin lozen, turmeric. Really? Turmeric? Interesting. But it doesn't say anything about removing it. It just says put it on and then see a doctor immediately if needed.
I can't find it. But the stuff that we – the powder that we had in the Army, and it cauterizes the wound. And it stops the bleeding. But, like I said, this was 10 years ago. So unless they've redone it, then, because they used to have to cut it out.
Different. I think this might be something different.
Yeah, and they got, see, and this is right here, and this is what it has. It says, in studies of battlefield casualties, 50% of those killed in action died of blood loss. 25% died within the first golden hour of being wounded. That's why they call it the golden hour. And there's a golden hour for everything. Strokes, heart attacks, everything. So a victim's chance of survival diminishes significantly after an hour without care, with threefold increase in mortality rate for every 30 minutes without care after. The control of major hemorrhage may be the territory of the trauma surgeon. So what happens if you don't have any modern medical care? Okay, see, they changed it. In the last decade or so, there have been major advancements in hemostasis, which is stopping blood loss. Although there are various types of hemostatic agents on the market, there's quick clot and C-lot. Quick clot originally contained a volcanic mineral, zeolite, which effectively clotting bleeding wounds also caused a reaction that would cause burns, and that was part of the problem, and that's why they said.
I have zeolite. I'm supposed to be taking it as a supplement.
So the current generation is made from kaolin, a clay mineral that's in kaopectate, and it does not contain animal, human, or botanical components. One negative with quick clot is it does not absorb into the body and can be difficult to remove from the wound. This was certainly true in previous generations, but it's also claimed no longer to be a big issue, especially if you use the brand's gauze dressing. Ah, okay. That's like I said, so they must have changed it. You need to use the specific gauze that goes with it because I guess it helps pull it off. So Cialis is the other popular hemostatic agent, and it's composed of chitosan, an organic material processed from shrimp shells. Yeah, don't ever use that on me. I'm allergic to it. Despite this, the company claims it can be used in with patients allergic to seafood. When Cialis comes in contact with blood, it bonds with it to form a clot that appears as a gel. Like Quick Clot, it also comes in impregnated gauze dressings. Yeah, there is the Quick Clot dressings and the powder. Okay, Cialis will cause effective clotting even in those anticoagulants such as heparin, coumadin, warfarin, without further depleting clotting factors. Chitosan, organic material, is gradually broken down by the body's natural enzymes into other substances normally found there. Quick Clot, like Quick Clot, Cialis is FDA approved, and studies by the U.S. government compare Cialis favorably to other hemostatic agents. So if you can get Cialis, it's a lot better. But as it says, but the difficulty of hemostatic agents is it may be difficult to remove. But it doesn't talk about removal. But like I said, back in the day, the surgeons would have to cut it out. But they can control how much bleeding is done at a time. So I stand corrected. Apparently, it stays on.
Well, it's true. It's not that you were wrong. You were right for what you knew, but, I mean, you didn't realize that they have a new product to change.
It has, yes, and it has an expiration date of 5 to 6 years. So the ones that I have, I need to throw away. I've had it for 10 years. So
mine's good for 4.
So soft tissue wound care. So once you stop the bleeding and apply the dressing, you're in a safer territory than you were. So if you're in a good situation where you have advanced medical care, like a hospital, you just send the person to the hospital. So an open wound can heal by two methods. Primary intention, the wound is closed in some way, such as with sutures, staples, even the glue. Which my body does not like adhesive. So, yeah. This results in a smaller scar, but carries the risk of inadvertently getting bacteria in the wound. That's why it's important to irrigate the wound. Secondary is granulation, leaving a wound open. Certain wounds you have to leave open. They have to heal from the inside out. One is the cubitus ulcers, pressure sores. Now, there's different methods. Now, there's different methods for healing the cubitus ulcers. There's the vacuum where you put a sponge and you got to cut it exactly to the shape of the wound, the depth. The depth of the wound cannot be, however deep it is, it has to be even with the body when you put the sponge in it, because then you got to put this tape over it, and you got to. It's a big process, but they use
the
vacuum.
I was a CNA in a nursing home. Trust me, I know about the cubitus sores, however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the thing is,
they're awful.
They have these. Well, the thing is, it's repositioning every 2 hours. Did you know that you could get a pressure ulcer even though you are not bedbound? Because all it takes is 2 hours to sit in one position on a bony prominence on a person. Now, don't get me wrong. Just because some of us well-cushioned people can still get them. But yes, the bonier a person
might
is,
take a little
yeah.
longer, but
yeah, your heel, the back of your heel,
yep,
yep, your butt, your shoulder blades, your elbows are the biggest areas for getting pressure ulcers. Now that's why you would shift positions.
That's why you have to be first, you have to be really careful. People who have sedentary jobs have to be really careful to get up and move around. You know, that's
now,
why they say you're
forget,
supposed to get up and walk around your office.
But here's the thing. Just say you got a gunshot wound or a penetrating, I don't care, any kind of major surgery or a major wound. You're bedbound. You still
but
have
you can
you
still,
can be 35 years old. You still have to shift your body weight. Even if
yes,
it's
that's
just
that's
taking
that's the thing.
Yeah, all you got to do is, like, shift your butt. I mean, there's...
Right.
You see, the way it was back in the old day was back, side, back, other side, back, side, other side, you know.
Right.
But now, to add to it, all I would do is gently pull the sheet, and it's like
right.
tilting them, like, 10 degrees because you're taking all the pressure off of one hip. And then
you
can
get those,
do the
triangle pillows. Those triangle pillows, they help
yes.
too because you just, you know,
oh, you can use a pillow. You can use a pillow. Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Just say you got someone in bed because of a sickness or an injury.
Uh-huh.
Don't put the pillow under their heel. Let their foot hang over the edge because it's, if you put the pillow under their foot, they're still going to have pressure there. So
right.
you got to put the pillow right at the Achilles heel, right there. You can also put it under their knees to take more pressure off the bottom. You can put it just – and when you turn the person to the side, you can push a pillow underneath their back a little bit. I mean, it's all about movement and keeping pressure. So it's not just bedbound patients. It's anybody that has any type of injury. So, like I said, so remember the old saying, the solution to pollution is dilution. Using a bulb
the
or
what?
Syringe, you know, the bulb syringe, hold on, I'll get there. Will provide pressure to the flow of water and wash out the old clots and dirt. Lightly scrub, this is when you irrigate a wound. Here's the thing. When you irrigate a wound, right, and you use a syringe,
right.
and this could be on any
yeah.
type of wound, don't let it just drip, drip, drip. No, just squirt that crap on there, the water, the saline, because you're,
right.
you're pushing
you
out
drip,
the...
Drip.
Because you know what? Some wounds hurt. As a matter of fact, dog bites. When they irrigated my thumb from the, she stuck the damn syringe, those big, huge 100cc syringes, and she filled it full of saline, and she put it right there, rested it right there at the hole, and she pushed it through. It burns like a mother. But what it's doing is it's forcing all the germs out. Yeah,
right.
Laugh now. It hurts like a mother.
I'm sorry, but I just laugh at the way you put it. That's all.
Okay, now, when you're cleaning a wound, it may bleed a lot. It may bleed a little. And it's called serous drainage. And that's clear. And that's normal. Like we've mentioned, on any type of drainage, clear is good, but you may have a little bit of blood tinge to it. That's fine because you're cleaning out the wound. It's when it
right.
turns white, yellow, green, brown, and
right,
nasty
that you
and
have to
blood.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Or smell.
And also,
smell.
Yeah. And that too. Yeah, that too. Now, you will notice that if the person had surgery in a hospital, wounds will have a sterile smell. That's normal. And it's
right.
you have to understand what a sterile smell is. there's a stuff, it's called iodoform dressing. It's
uh-huh.
It smells like betadine almost. And that's what's in iodoform. It's a packing. And we use a lot of stuff to pack wounds and pull it out, and it helps to drain it. If you ever had a boil that had to wick it to drain it, they'll use that iodoform to pack it, and all the crap drains out. But that's what a sterile wound smells like. So that's fine. And it actually smells like betadine almost. It's one of those smells. If you smell it, you'll know what I'm talking about. Shut up. There's Dakin solution, and that's what we use a lot in the nursing home. The Dakin, it helps kill all the bacteria and the bad bacteria and germs and wounds, but it's not always easy to get. So, but hold on a second. You can make your own Dakin. Woo wee. So,
what the hell?
You can make it. Sodium hypochlorite solution, which is regular strength bleach, baking soda, and boiled tap water. And that is Dakin solution. Well, shit.
Huh.
I got to keep that. I got to mark this because I did not know that. Well, that's just too cool. See what you learn when you listen to me ramble?
Is that a lot?
Huh?
I said, is that something you would use a lot?
No, that I would use. You would use that for bed sores. And it's a half a teaspoon of baking soda, 4 cups of sterilized water, and then add bleach to reach the strength that you'll need. 3 teaspoons will act as a mild antiseptic. As for clean wounds that are healing, add 3 tablespoons will give you a stronger effect for infected wounds. Do not, I repeat, do not drink this.
Why would you?
So, yes, you can use Dakin's apparently on any type of wound.
So basically it's an antiseptic.
Yes. So, but also, you're going to want, because it is bleach, you're going to want to watch for irritations on the skin. And that's why when you do a dressing change, shut up, dogs, try and keep it away from healthy skin if you can, if at all possible. Yeah. So, anywho, you would store it. I lost it. In a dark... stored in darkness at room temperature, and make a new batch frequently because it loses its potency. And do not freeze it or heat it up. So basically, don't make it until you need it. That way you know you're going to use it all up. To ensure rapid healing of open wounds, use a type of dressing. It's called wet to dry. Wet to dry means whatever's on top, inside the wound is wet, right? And then the dry, like a Curlex or gauze or whatever, to cut that's to dry. And when you do a dressing change, that actually pulls all of the germs into the bandage. See, they use it. Some doctors are sadists, and they like the dry to dry. because you're when you pull, I don't think they've ever had this done to themselves personally. But the whole point of a dry dressing is to pull the dead skin off or the infected skin or underneath the tissue, and it pulls off the dead shit so it'll continuously degranulate. But unless you're a sadist yourself and you like pain, I would never do a dry-to-dry dressing. I fight doctors on that because I think it's wrong. But, hey, what am I? New cells are prevented from drying out by keeping them in a moist environment. On top of the bandage that touches the healing wound, place a dry bandage and tape to secure it, thus wet to dry. Okay, also, this goes back to when you do a dressing change. You're changing the temperature of the wound. And it slows healing by 8 hours. So it has to get back to a certain thing. Same thing as if you take antibiotics. You're killing all of the good bacteria in your stomach and in your intestines. And that's why it takes time to, for your body to naturally replenish the good stuff. And that's what happens every time you do a dressing change. Now, if by chance the dressing gets dirty, well, duh, yeah, you're going to have to change it. You don't want it because then you're just breeding. It's a petri dish of more infections. So, yes, then you're going to want to change it, which is why you have
Isn't
to make sure
that
you have
a... That unless otherwise, you know, notice you should not be changing a dressing more than once or twice a day because of that, unless it gets dirty?
You should change a dressing at least once a day, maybe twice, depending on the wound itself.
Yeah, if I said no more than once or twice a day unless it gets dirty or otherwise noted.
Yeah. Now, if it's also, if there's a lot of drainage, or a lot of blood, well, then, yeah, you're going to have to change it. See, the only time that you would change, like if just say, for instance, you have, I don't care, any type of major wound, right? And it's in the healing phase. But say the person overexerts themselves and they break their stitches or they did something and they start to bleed heavy. Okay, at that point in time, yes, you would take the bandage off, put a new one on. The only time you are reinforcing is at the initial injury.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, just say, for instance, you can't get to change the dressing after you're healing. Say you're out and all you can do is reinforce it. Woo, by all means, reinforce it until you can change it as soon as possible. Shut up. Damn dog. So you can also use some triple antibiotic ointment, depending on the doctor, if you're the doctor or the whatever. Make sure you're well-versed. It would be a good idea to look up, like I said, like while we do this, get some of these survival medicine books. Read them. I got my new home doctor book. And it was written by three doctors who do the Doctors Without Borders. And they wrote the book specifically for things like this. And one of them, he says he's not a prepper, but he likes to always be prepared. And that's why he helped write this book. Oh, excuse me.
So I would imagine, so since it's by three different doctors, I mean, do they all say the same thing, or do they have any different perspectives? Because, you know, as we know, I mean, everything can, there are some things that are absolute no matter what, but there are
some things
that can have, yeah.
Oh, that you can, well, that's what the whole thing is. It's treating it homeopathically, and it's also treating with modern medicine, if you can. Hold on a second. I've got it. Yeah. I hate to do this, but talk amongst yourselves for a second. I have to, use the bathroom. I'm sorry, guys.
Well, I guess we could wake up Bobby and have him entertain us.
Tie a knot in it.
Seriously, I had to pee. Sorry. I know that's not professional, but guess what? This is at home, and I'm not at a radio station. So, I suck it up. This is. I'll just wait to flush the toilet after. Okay, I'll be nice.
Hey, hey, mention my name, you'll get a good seat.
That's funny. Okay, so yeah, the doctors who wrote the book. They did it for the homeopathic and then for, you know, most of your standard medical stuff. So anyway, let's see. Raw honey, lavender oil, and tea tree oil are also some other natural alternatives. You can go to, and I'm going to, I need to do this so I can see if I can get us a discount for using Vitality Medical Supplies. Because you can go to any medical supply store online. Walmart sells it. Everybody sells it. It's honey, but it's in the medical section, but you can't eat this honey. It has the raw honey in it, but it has other things in it for medicinal purposes. That's what the honey is good for. So this is a non-viable material. Hold on. As time goes on, you might see some blackish material on the wound, and this is non-viable material, and it has to be removed. And that's why when you remove it, it's called debridement. Now,
yes.
The thing about
it, to get the flies, the larvae.
No. See, here's the thing. It might just, you could scrub it off, gently scrub it, and it'll come off. Or you may need to take your scissors or scalpel and trim off the dead tissue. Now, here's the thing. Do I trust Joe Schmo to use a scalpel on me? Hell no.
Fuck no.
Which is why a doctor needs to do that. Now, in the case if you don't have the doctor and you are the acting doctor, then I suggest you practice on, what do they say, a pig has the same, Bobby, would you know, you know this?
Yeah, I think it is
a pig.
Pig
carcass.
The skin, yeah. They sell kits that you can get, because when I was looking for the suture kits, they have some really interesting kits that you could get, you know, and it had, I think one did mention about pigskin or latex or some kind of shit.
Yeah,
that imitates skin. And
they have a practice kit.
Stuff.
But yeah, all you got to do is take part of the outer layer of if you have a ham or whatever, and you could practice cutting the just a layer of the fat or whatever. Just practice cutting it slowly before you go and hack on someone. And then now, here's the other thing. If you happen to have modern-day medicine like morphine, Dilaudid, Percocet, any of that stuff, then before you – and now I should have mentioned this earlier – if somebody gets, if you're at an injury, an accident or whatever, never give the person pain medication.
No.
Because it'll mask what's wrong with them at the time. The doctors won't know because your whole body could be numb from pain. So you don't give pain medication until after the initial trauma treatment of surgery or whatever the doctor does. Now, in the healing process, some pain is good. Excruciating pain is not. Because when the pain is too bad, it slows the healing process. So if it's a 1, 2, or 3, on a scale of 1 to 10, right, through 4 is okay. It's once you start getting... I mean, even 4, 5, and 6, I would say that's like, it's aggravating, but you could do minor. Yeah, you could do minor. But once you start getting this, like, 8, 9, and 10 plus, your healing's going to stop. That's why you need to medicate. Now, if you ever in the position that you have to do a dressing change on anybody, pre-medicate them. 30 minutes before you, at least 30 minutes to an hour before you do the dressing change, because that way they're not in pain.
You can't play safe.
Unless you're a sadistic person and don't care. But please.
What if it's the enemy?
But please.
What if it's the enemy?
Where's what?
What if it is the enemy?
Oh, I don't treat the enemy. Sorry. If if anything were to pop off right now, black flag, no quarter, and no, I'm sorry, I will never surrender, and no quarter will be given to the enemy, and I don't treat the enemy. I'm sorry, it's a harsh thing to say, but that's just tough. I'm not wasting my medical supplies on the enemy. It just ain't going to happen.
Well, that's true. I agree. The way things are going, you got to put ourselves through.
With that being said, when I say the enemy, I don't mean someone that you don't know. Enemy as in right now,
no,
it's good versus evil.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's not Republican versus Democrat. It's not. No.
It's not.
Yeah, it's just someone outright that hates you and hates everything about you. That's the enemy. Don't get me wrong. I've helped random people when I was out on my four-wheeler, and this dingbat, she did some 360s, rolls her four-wheeler, and it landed on top of her. I'm going to help her. I mean, that's because I'm a nurse, and that's what I'm going to do. So, but if you don't know what to do, don't help.
No.
Call, make the person comfortable. But because I know there's a Good Samaritan Act, and I know it protects you, but if you do shit to screw up and cause that person to die, the Good Samaritan Act's not going to help you.
No.
So,
I mean, like you said, there is something you can do, and, you have to use common sense.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing with that. You have to use common sense, and that's the problem. People don't use common sense.
No. So when and why would you choose to close a wound? Like I said, the rule of thumb is to always use the least invasive method. Tape,
right.
Glues, staples, then sutures. Now, with the tapes, they're talking Steri-Strips, Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Steri-Strips work great. Glues.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I
whatever. The Dermabond. Okay, look, it depends on the person. Will depend on, and also how big the wound is.
Right.
So, there are several methods available.
Location and.
Oh, this is cool. You can make an improvised butterfly closure with duct tape.
Really?
Yes. Okay. You know you're a redneck if duct tape is
good
for your medical support. Okay.
I always have duct tape.
Okay. So here's the thing. You got a piece, and it's probably just say, depending on how long, you would take the duct tape for however long, like it's 2 inches wide. I'd use the wider stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so basically what they have is, it's about 2 inches, the tape is 2 inches wide. And what you would do is you cut it till you make it look like the letter H. I will actually take a picture of this and I'll put it in the Telegram.
Yeah. Now,
you cut 2 little flaps in the middle and you bend it down to the inside where it doesn't stick. Sure, a capital H. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And the two long pieces will stick to the skin. That middle piece,
right,
is there's no adhesive on it. So, and so you put it on one side and you pull tight. You make sure the wound is together. You don't let it get where it'll pooch out. Try and keep it where
tight,
the wound is, like it's just closed. Okay, and then you place the other thing, the other side down. And that's an improvised butterfly stitch. That, like I said, if you ain't got duct tape in your medic bag, I'm telling you, I'm going to get some duct tape. I would use Gorilla
tape.
Get Gorilla tape. But there's other types of medical tape that you can use, silk tape, and that shit don't come off for nothing.
Different types of medical tape.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I have the seat.
But they also have staples. Not sure, a lot of orthopedic doctors use staples. And when you remove them, you remove every other one, and then you go back and every other one, and then, you know, after 7 days, yeah, that's how they remove them. I have staple removal kits. I've got suture removal kits. But the thing is, I've never put either one on anybody because I'm not a doctor. So,
I've done sutures. Yeah. I did sutures when I was 18, but regular needle and thread. And hopefully she wound up with a scar because she was an idiot.
Now, get this.
We'll let her bleed to death.
Okay, the most skilled person is actually the one holding the tweezers, not the person who's actually put the staples in.
Well, there's a
reason
why.
Because they're asleep. It's not going to hurt. They're asleep. So the person who put the sutures in and who stapled you together, that's skill, but whatever. You're passed out. You're knocked out. It's when you have to remove them. And that's where it's more of a finesse and a skill to remove them. And like I said, unless you're a sadist and you just don't care.
I can see that with the staple. But why with the sutures? I mean, I have had...
Because
it didn't bother me to have them removed.
Think about...
Even the ones that were in my eye.
Listen, think about it this way. Removing staples from a person is no different than removing staples in paper. It's a different staple remover because it pulls it out. It's a one big movement.
Right.
You can't stop it. You push it down, it's done. Okay, sutures, there's two different types. There's the one continuous suture where they just start from the top and they weave it in and out, and you got to pull it out. Okay, that hurts like hell. Or there's the individual ones where they make like individual loops.
Yeah, that's
and
what
you
I
cut
the
them.
Individual ones. Yeah.
And here's the problem. Skin grows over it over days, the adhesions, and that's why they hurt a little more. So,
Using
sutures.
Maybe that's why it didn't bother me.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. And that's the most invasive one is the sutures, but I would think staples too, but whatever. I'm going to stop at when to close a wound because it's just going to take too long. Because then we have blisters, splinters, and fish hooks. Yay.
That's not funny. I had one.
Yeah, I know, me too. Well, we've already gone over animal bites 1,000 times, so I'm not going to really go over that. And then, let's see, what's next? Yeah, we've done snake bites 1,000,000 times. I'm just trying to figure out what's next. And we got spider bites, bees and wasps and all that cool shit. Let's see. I guess we could go ahead. I mean, unless everyone wants to go over those bites and stuff like that again, I can. If not, I'll skip it. And then we got head injuries, sprains, and strains, which happens all the time.
Yeah, the strains and sprains, yeah.
Dislocations, fractures. Hold on. Let's see. Amputations. And then...
amputations.
And then we have chronic medical problems. And that's your everyday things. And this may be good for people. This could be good for just anything in general. And then, remember this. Diabetics take longer to heal. And that's the reason why they end up with a lot of pressure sores and they lose their feet, their toes. And they could be ambulatory. So... because you can't feel. You have a lot of neuropathy. So also take into consideration the type of wound care that you can do. Also,
right.
If the person is on dialysis. I got my ass chewed out, but because I used a wound vac on a diabetic who was on dialysis. And I'm like, I got directions from the doctor. So I don't care what your opinion is. Like I said, as an LPN, we can only do, we can only practice within the scope of our training, unless you're out in the middle of nowhere. And so whatever the doctor tells you to do, that's what you do. If an RN comes behind me and says, no, 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 you can't do that. I mean, you got to do it this way. No, because the doctor wants it done a specific way. So anyway, this woman had, she never, ever, ever reuse your diabetic or your insulin syringes. Never reuse them.
Of course not.
And that's what, well, no, see, she was on SSI and she reused her insulin syringe. And she was a morbidly obese. She was quite a big woman. And she had the stomach hang down. And what happened was from her belly button all the way down, she had a massive abscess. And it was like 8 inches across, like 4 inches deep. And I used a wound vac. I healed that up within 3 weeks. Completely healed in 3 weeks. And the RN was, I think she was just pissed because she didn't do it. And, I was like, whatever. But always remember, do what the doctor says first.
Right.
If you don't agree with it, get a second opinion.
Right.
But chances are it's going to be the way the other doctor said. So always follow up with your doctor if you're able to. So that is all. I am done. So, Bobby, you can wait.
Bobby.
I'm here. Awesome.
Thursday is our normal what the hell's going on. Something to look for, and I said look forward to. They're already claiming a new pandemic will be coming out this fall or winter.
I forget what it's called.
Going to be related to the vaccine. It's going to be related to the vaccine.
Yes, it's a blood clotting one. That's right. Yeah.
No, not blood clotting. It's going to be hemorrhagic, like Marburg. Is what they're saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Mom.
Were you bleed to death?
Blood. Yeah.
Yeah. It's no different than Ebola. Marburg is in the same family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Now, does that have something to do with bleed out? There's no, do you have to take a blood clotting medicine or something?
No. There's no cure. There's no vaccine for Marburg. You treat symptoms, and that's it. Now,
that's what I said. Isn't it something you bleed out?
Your organs liquefy.
Okay.
That's what happens.
That's not what I was thinking for something else. Okay.
But basically, it's IV fluids. I mean, they could probably do antibiotics, but the thing is, it's a virus, and you treat with pain medicines. Yeah, you might be able to get vitamin K to slow down the bleeding. But once you start bleeding, it's kind of like
so you're dead. If you're dead, you're dead.
Well, here's the thing. Marburg has an 80% fatality rate.
That's what I heard.
Now,
well,
have you guys seen the movie The Crazy?
That's the problem. Enough of us are just refusing. Too many of us are refusing the vaccine. That's what it is.
Then they're going to blame it on us. Have you guys seen the movie The Crazies?
Yeah.
That was made. Okay. Did you know that's true?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know?
I heard
based
that.
On a true story.
I looked it up. It's called Rabdo Verde.
Yep.
It's rabies. It's what it is.
Basically.
That's another one. The government released that to see how to depopulate or... to see what would happen in a population, and it spread by the drinking water.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm like, I wonder if this shit, because I know when you see these movies, they'll tweak it and make it to whatever, and you know, it's like whatever. But no, that movie's true. It can happen.
Yeah.
And I did. Yeah. It's called Rhabdo Verde, or they called it Trixie.
I think that's why I keep telling people the zombie apocalypse. Yeah, everybody, you know, they used to laugh at me, and I'm like, look, you don't understand. It's not about dead bodies. That's not what zombies are. They're not, I mean, they're not literally dead, decaying bodies.
No.
So, you know,
this is what Rhabdo Verde causes. Same thing as rabies. Same thing. It causes aggressiveness, hemorrhaging, high fever, and you deteriorate. And it's exactly the way the movie portrays it. That's exactly what happens. Also, you have an aversion to water.
Yeah.
You cannot give the person water. They freak the hell out. I don't know why.
Okay, now we're down to 3 minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, everybody that's called in, and thank you, those of you there on our messenger here, our chat room. I'd like to say God bless America, God bless our children, our veterans, first responders, our military. Spit it out. And God bless the Defender 7. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.